Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
According to church tradition, June 29th marks the martyrdom of the Apostle Paul. In 2019, the Bartlesville, Oklahoma-based Voice of the Martyrs set that day as Day of the Christian Martyr, an annual reminder of those who remained strong in the face of persecution and in the end paid the ultimate price. My guest today is Todd Nettleton. He's Vice President of Message for the Voice of the Martyrs USA and host of the Voice of the Martyrs Radio. Thanks, Todd, for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So why did Voice of the Martyrs feel that it was so important to commemorate June 29th or set June 29th apart as Day of the Christian Martyr?
You know, every November we have the International Day of Prayer for Persecuted Christians, and we're thinking about and praying for Christians who are persecuted today. But we really felt like there was a gap in looking backward and thinking about Christians who literally gave their lives for the cause of Christ. And really, that's the genesis of the Day of the Christian Martyr is, hey, what if we look backwards? What if we look at these brothers and sisters who were willing to sacrifice their life rather than deny Christ? And, you know, we don't want it to be kind of a hero worship experience where you're like, oh, wow, you know, they were super Christians and I'm just an average Christian. But what we really want to grow out of it is a sense of inspiration. Hey, these brothers and sisters were willing to sacrifice everything. What would I sacrifice to see my neighbors reached with the gospel, to see my city changed by the presence of Jesus Christ? And, you know, honestly, as I've been thinking about it this year, I've really been struck by the thought that for most of us here in the United States, what we're actually risking when we have a conversation about the gospel is not that somebody's going to pull out a gun and shoot us or that they're going to beat us up. What we're really risking is the conversation could get a little awkward. You know, they could say, yeah, I don't believe any of that stuff. Or they could say, yeah, I've been to church, but it's full of hypocrites. I don't even like those people. It might be an awkward conversation. That's really the worst case scenario, is an awkward conversation. And so I hope as we think about brothers and sisters who were willing to die, literally to be shot and killed or to be beheaded, as we think about their example, I hope that more of us are willing to say, okay, yeah, I could survive an awkward conversation. I'm going to go ahead and talk to my neighbors about Christ. I'm going to go ahead and offer to pray with this person who I just met. I hope more of us will be willing to have those conversations.
That's an excellent point, because we here in the United States, sometimes because of, you know, things that are going on politically, feel that we're being persecuted, but in reality, we're not. When you look at in the whole scheme of things, we're not really being persecuted. We really live in a post-Christian America, yes, but we don't live in a Muslim nation. Whereas you said, if a Muslim comes to faith, they're usually rejected by their family, who's their Muslim family, and they risk being martyred. They risk being killed. And, you know, we here in the U.S. don't fully understand what persecution is. Even though we think we do, we don't. So this is an excellent idea to draw our attention to those in who have given the ultimate price, who have paid the ultimate cost for following Christ. And, you know, I think it's a great idea. And I had no idea that June 29th was traditionally marked as the day that Paul was beheaded. I had no idea that was the day. So even that in itself, you know, draws attention to what the apostles went through in a very anti-Christian environment as they spread this new gospel, this new good news that Christ has brought us. I know I get your all's magazine, Voice of the Martyrs magazine, and this month you drew our attention to the Middle East. When I think of the Middle East, I think the vast majority are Muslim, but yet what happened, you know, when ISIS was going through Syria and northern Iraq back in, I think it was 2014, that impacted hundreds of thousands of Christians. And even that number is hard to wrap our head around as far as being that many Christians being in the Middle East. What happened in 2014 as ISIS was rolling through?
Well, it's interesting, and I think it's kind of hard to believe. It's actually 10 years ago this month that ISIS swept across the Nineveh Plains. They swept into the city of Mosul, and they literally announced from the loudspeakers of the mosques that, hey, if you're a Christian, you have three choices. You can become a Muslim. That's what we want you to do. You can run for your life, or you can be killed. Mm. And so they literally went door to door to Christian homes. They painted the Arabic letter N or Noon onto the homes of Christians. That was a way of claiming that property for the Islamic State. It was also a way of saying, hey, these are the people who have to leave or become Muslims, or we're going to kill them. So it was very much a threat against the Christians. And as you mentioned, there were tens of thousands of Christians who ran for their lives. They had no hope in Mosul. They fled. I was in northern Iraq a few months later in September of that year in the city of Erbil. And every city park, every open courtyard, every half-completed building was filled with refugees. Oh, wow. They literally, like, every space that you could put down a mattress or put down a tarp, they were there. They were living, they were sleeping, they were trying to survive. And so I remember the desperation of that. But there were some who didn't flee or couldn't flee who did give their lives. They were killed because they said, I won't become a Muslim. I don't care what you do to me. I'm not going to become a Muslim. I am a Christian. And those people gave their lives. That's the people that we're really honoring this year for Day of the Christian Martyr.
Yeah, and even today in the Middle East and other places too, but in the Middle East, there are still Christians giving their lives. And again, it's hard for Americans to wrap their heads around just that idea that they're Christians today who are giving their lives and standing strong for their faith for Christ. So you're saying you were there a couple months later, You said you were north of Mosul when you went?
We were in Erbil, which is to the, east of Mosul, okay. About an hour's drive east of Mosul. So it was the major city where many of the Christians fled to after Mosul fell. In fact, I remember at one point we were about 5 kilometers from the line where ISIS was on one side and the Kurdish Peshmerga troops were on the other side, and I was like, okay, let's go a different direction. Yeah, we don't want to get any closer.
Oh, my goodness, wow. So some, as you said, some Christians were not able to or unwilling to leave, and they lost their lives because of that. But looking at the tens of thousands of Christians who did flee, have they been able to go back home? Have things settled down?
Most of them, no. Things have somewhat settled down. ISIS has been kicked out of Mosul. But what is left to go back to? Yeah. That's one of the major questions. There is no infrastructure. There is no economy. Even if you want to go back, where are you going to live? Yeah. What are you going to do for a job? And so most of the Christians that fled haven't gone back, and many of them, frankly, never will go back. Mm-hmm. One of the really sad things, and I mentioned this is 10 years ago, there are still thousands of Christians who are in Turkey or in Lebanon or in Jordan that fled this area, and we're 10 years later, and they still don't have a life. They're not legal in the country where they're at, so their kids can't go to school. They can't get jobs. Most of them have applied for refugee status to go somewhere else, maybe Western Europe, maybe Canada, maybe the U.S., but they haven't been approved for that yet. So they literally have been in a holding pattern. Their whole life has been on hold for 10 years now. Wow. And they're still waiting to find out, okay, where can we go? I was in Jordan in the end of 2021, and we met a family who had just learned that they had been accepted by Australia. So they had been in Jordan as refugees for 7.5 years. Their kids hadn't gone to school. They hadn't worked. And they had just found out, yes, we're going to get to move to Australia. And they were so joyful about having a chance, like having a future now. But at the same time, it was like, our kids, what grade are they going to be in? They haven't gone to school for 7 years. How are we going to help them catch up with their peers? What's going to happen to them? There were so many questions and so much fear about, what does our life look like in the future? And they were the lucky ones. They were the blessed ones who had been accepted to Australia. And we met others who were still waiting, and some had been waiting for years, and they didn't know how much longer they would wait. And so, I think we prayed for Christians in Mosul 10 years ago, we need to keep praying for them, because many of them are still in that situation of really not knowing what the future looks like.
And a lot can happen in 10 years, except in that, in their situation, they're like in limbo. They're not able to, like you say, get a job. Their children cannot go to school because they are not legally in those countries. You mentioned Turkey and Jordan. You know, those countries are majority Muslim, aren't they?
They are.
And that's why they can't get jobs and such.
Christian refugees are not necessarily welcome. And that's one of the things, too. And I remember talking to one of the men in Jordan, and, you know, he'd been there seven. And I was like, so what do you do every day? Like, mm-hmm. What does your life look like? And he was like, well, I get up in the morning and I have breakfast. Then I go down to the park. There's a group of men that we kind of hang out and talk in the park. And then I come home and eat lunch and take a nap. And then, you know, the next day starts. And it's just like, you've been doing that for 7 years? Yeah, I've been doing it for 7 years. And no clue how much longer he'd have to do it before he could go somewhere else. And so it really is a heartbreaking situation. And it's kind of a forgotten situation.
Oh, yeah.
We talk a lot about Mosul 10 years ago, but somewhere along the way, it's like we've got other stuff to worry about. We've got other crisis in the world. But these people are still living that crisis 10 years later.
Yeah, and that's so true about so many situations around the world, really. You know, there's a hot spot here or a hot spot there, and it's in the news here in America, and it's in the news for maybe a day or two, maybe even a week or two, and then it's forgotten. But the situation in those hot spots are still there, and the people who were impacted by whatever's going on, they're still being impacted. And as you're saying, 10 years later, the situation for these Christians is still an ongoing situation where they can't go back home, and you know, there's nothing to go back home to because ISIS tended to destroy everything when they went through an area. They were very well known for that. You mentioned a couple families or a couple individuals that you met over there. How are they holding up under this, not knowing what tomorrow holds, although nobody knows what tomorrow holds really, but how are they holding up under this stress? It's got to be stress to live like that. Even though you don't, you know, and one of the stresses is not having anything to do. That'd be a stress for me for sure.
It is very, very stressful. And there's just no answers. And there's no timeline of when. It's not like, hey, in 3 months, I'm going to know. So if I can just hang on for 3 months, it's like, I don't know when I'm going to know. I don't know when the answers are going to come. I don't know when my refugee status will be approved. And so it really, the word limbo that you used is the perfect word. They are in limbo. And it is discouraging. One of the things, though, that has happened is the church is ministering to them. And I met a pastor in Jordan several years ago now who was called. He had a person in his church who said, hey, I have some funds. I want to fund you to do refugee ministry. And he said, he told the person, no, mm-hmm. I'm not interested in doing refugee ministry. I don't want to minister to the refugees. I've got a church here. I'm busy. And he said he went home that night and laid down in bed, and the Lord just really laid on his mm-hmm. heart. No, this was from me. I want you to do this ministry. Mm-hmm. And so he called the guy back the next day and said, okay, fine, I'll do refugee ministry. Yeah. It was just really not happy about it, not excited about it at all. But he had seen God work so much in that refugee ministry that he said, you know, the day of the week when I go and am with the refugees, that's my favorite day of the week now. Mm-hmm. That's the day I look forward to what God is doing. And he had seen God heal people. He had seen God provide for people. And so there is ministry that is happening among these refugees. And some of these refugees, frankly, were kind of identity Christians. They were born in a Christian family. And so maybe they had never had a Bible. Maybe they had never been to church. They had never heard a gospel presentation that you can know Jesus in a personal way. They have now heard those things. They have had that opportunity to read the scripture. And so there has been a lot of spiritual growth that has happened, even in this state of limbo, even in this season of waiting.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, God can use anything. And again, looking at Christians here in America, how many are truly Christians, or were they, as you mentioned, with some of the refugees, they're born into a Christian family, and how many situations are similar to that in the United States? People were born into a Christian family and they just assume that they're Christians, but they don't really have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And sometimes it takes that crisis to awaken them to the fact that they need to accept Christ as Savior and live an authentic Christian life. So God's using that, and that's fantastic. I know you guys help refugees, and you help families of martyrs and stuff. What are some of the missions that you guys, Voice of the Martyrs, do?
Well, there's kind of three main areas of our ministry in hostile and restricted nations. So in the 70-plus countries where Christians are persecuted, the first is what we call persecution response, and that is just how it sounds. Mm-hmm. Someone is persecuted, we help them. Maybe they were injured and they need to get medical care. Maybe their home was burned down and they need a place to stay. All of those would fall under persecution response. The second area is Bibles. We often say the first thing persecuted Christians ask us to do is to pray, and the second thing is to send more Bibles. And so we distribute more than 1 million Bibles every year into hostile and restricted nations, the hardest places in the world to get a Bible, the hardest places in the world to follow Christ. We are giving Bibles to God's people in those places. And then the third area is what we call frontline ministry. And I call them pre-persecuted Christians. Maybe they haven't been persecuted yet, but they're doing evangelism. They're doing church planting in an area where persecution is common. They are likely to be persecuted at some point along the way. Mm-hmm. And so for those brothers and sisters, we provide tools and training and encouragement to help make their ministry more fruitful and to encourage them and to prepare them for the day when persecution does come. And then our ministry here in the U.S. is just what we're doing now, telling the stories of these brothers and sisters, helping American Christians to know about our family that's suffering persecution, to be able to pray for them effectively, to be able to be in fellowship with them, really to follow the scripture. Hebrews 13:3 says, remember those in prison as if you were in prison with them. Mm-hmm. Voice of the Martyrs tries to help people do that. We will tell you their names. We'll tell you where they're in prison so that you can remember them as the scripture calls us to.
You also provide opportunities online to send letters to prisoners, if I'm recalling correctly.
We do. PrisonerAlert.com is the website for that. And it actually translates your letter into the language of the prisoner. So when you print it out and put it in the envelope, it's in Urdu if it's going to Pakistan, or it's in Farsi if it's going to Iran. But yeah, that's one of the really practical things that people can do. And we know from former prisoners, we know those letters make a difference in how they are treated. Even if the prisoner doesn't get to read the letters, doesn't get to see the letters, it still makes a difference in the way they're treated by the prison officials, by the guards, because suddenly they have friends around the world. They have people around the world who are watching their case. And it's like, okay, we better make sure that person survives. We better make sure they get enough to eat, because look, all these people around the world are watching.
Right. Wow. That's neat, because even though they don't receive the letter, there are still ramifications in their favor, just for having an American or whoever having sent a letter to them. That's neat. So how can we here in the U.S. help? I mean, prisoneralert.com, send the letters and such. Are there other ways that we can help, especially these refugees? I mean, we're here in America, they're over there, and, you know, in too many cases, out of sight, out of mind. That's why it's so fantastic that Voice of the Martyrs is bringing their plight to not only their plight, but around the world, the plight of persecuted Christians. Are there ways that we can help here in the U.S.?
There absolutely are. The first way is to pray. And I mentioned that's mm-hmm. not my request. That's their request. Right. They want us to pray and pray that they'll stay faithful. We mentioned refugees, and we have a project called Christians Driven from Their Homes. And it's exactly that. It's Christians who had to flee their homes because of persecution, because of the danger. And we are helping them. And in some cases, it's, you know, helping them with housing, helping them with food. Always there is a spiritual aspect to that help as well. Maybe it's giving them a Bible. Maybe it's helping them connect with a church or with a pastor who can help them. But that is Christians Driven from Their Homes. And they have more information about that at our website, which is persecution.com. That's the Voice of the Martyrs website, persecution.com.
Okay, fantastic. Persecution, because that's my next question. How can we contact you? So persecution.com. And you have all sorts of information there, and can also be contacted through that website. So Todd, I appreciate your help and appreciate your ministry and Voice of the Martyr as a whole and the impact that it's making around the world, just opening our eyes to what's going on. I really appreciate that. We'll definitely be praying for those refugees and doing what we can here to get the word out about what's going on. Continue 10 years later. Again, you know, out of sight, out of mind. Most people don't, you know, most people just think, well, everything's back the way it used to be 10 years ago, and that's not the case at all. So I appreciate your time, and you guys be safe out there.
Thank you so much, and thank you to the listeners for praying for our persecuted brothers and sisters.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks a lot then. Okay. Bye.
All right.
Talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.